the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Coach G. I'm Seth Greenberg, and on today's edition of Courtside, we're going to talk to a couple of Wildcats. Head Wildcat Sean Miller of a players program talking about the process that his players went through in terms of making a decision to stay or go in the future of Arizona basketball. And one of those players that decided to return, Alonzo Trier, their leading returning scorer, averaged 17 points a game in a shortened season. Alonzo will be stopping by and spending some time with us. But before we do that, let's get to the Coach's Corner.
It's time to go deeper. We're heading into the Coach's Corner.
Josh, I'm going to shed a little bit of light on the old transfer process. And, you know, to me, there's a lot that's been going on. And first and foremost, let's get into the Cam Johnson situation. Cameron Johnson is a 3.9 student. He graduated from the University of Pittsburgh in 3 years. His dad played at the University of Pittsburgh. He's been a model student athlete. He asked for his release. He got his release, but what he didn't get is a blanket release. And what that means basically is Pitt controlled where he can and where he cannot attend. And what they did was they blocked ACC schools from basically recruiting him. Then they loosened it up and said, you know what? ACC schools, you can recruit them, but Cam, you have 2 years to play because you graduated in 3 years, but we're only going to allow you to play one because you're going to have to sit a year to play a year. To me, this is an absolute PR nightmare for the Pitt Panthers and Coach Kevin Stallings, and it's not right. The whole idea of college is to graduate, to better yourself. Cameron Johnson did everything that he was asked to do on and off the court. He graduated, and it's just not going to end right for Pitt because in the end, they're going to give him his blanket release. In the end, he's going to be able to go to wherever he wants to go. And every day this thing moves forward, it's a bad look. And it's a bad look for Kevin Stallings because think about this. Kevin Stallings is the same guy that stopped Sheldon Jeter at one point from transferring from Vanderbilt to the University of Pittsburgh. Eventually, he gave in. Jeter transferred closer to home, and how do you know it? All of a sudden, Kevin Stallings, a year later, he decides to leave Vanderbilt. He becomes the head coach of Pitt, and he gets a chance to coach Sheldon Jeter one more time. It makes no sense. Let the young man go. Let him pursue his dream. Let him attend the school that he wants to attend. He might not end up in the ACC, but he also might end up in North Carolina. He's earned that right. Now, on the other side of that, Josh, I do have strong opinions on transfers in general, and that is this. I'm all for kids being able to transfer. I'm not all for schools recruiting players off other people's rosters. And that's what's happening today. You're seeing kids actually, while they're attending one institution, through the back channels of recruiting, being recruited right off campuses. That's not right. And if coaches have proof of tampering, they need to hold their ground. They need to turn those schools in, and they need to stop that from happening. Hard to prove, but the only way you're going to stop tampering is by calling it out. And finally, in the fifth-year transfer situation, what's happening is you're seeing these mid-major programs have fifth-year guys, and they're all transferring up. Again, giving these young people, after they graduate, an opportunity to play up. But you have to graduate to be a fifth-year transfer. Tell you what's going to happen. You're going to see some mid-major schools not pay for summer school, all right, not redshirt players, and then all of a sudden you won't see fifth-year transfers. So you know what you'll see instead, Josh? Here's what you're going to see. You're going to see a good player at a mid-major or low-major level. If he has a good freshman year, he's out the door. He's out the door and he's going to try to play up. We're seeing it in the Northeastern Conference where they had three or four players in that conference transfer up. We've seen it in Big South Conference in USC Asheville, where each and every year you see players leaving. So for every problem, there's a solution. But if a player wants to play up, If he's not a fifth-year transfer, he doesn't have the opportunity to be it. You're going to see players at the mid-major level and low-major level transfer earlier to get an opportunity to play on Broadway. Because when you're playing in a mid-major and you're playing in a low-major, you're playing off-Broadway. And every single player, even though they sign with a lower-level school, they all believe they can play at a higher level. And they're going to find a way, if they're good enough, to get to that level. That's the Coach's Corner for today. I'd like to welcome in Sean Miller into the show. Sean, you're out of witness protection. The season's over. You've had a chance to take a step back. Can you take the time, or have you given yourself a chance to take the time to realize what a special season you had with your basketball team?
You know, Seth, no question. Obviously, the spring is probably as different now as maybe it's ever been. So because of that, I don't think it's exclusive to Arizona. We tend to spend more time recruiting and sometimes making sure that your roster for a year from now is set. And, you know, back in the day, I think as soon as the season ended, you had a chance to take a deep breath. All of us, I think, are busier now than ever with the way the rules are. But to your point, yes, very much so. You know, I think as we look back in a year when the Pac-12 was very, very strong, for us to win, share the title, regular season title with Oregon, and be able to go to Las Vegas and win the Pac-12 tournament, I think just that alone makes us feel really good. And obviously when you lose the last game, Seth, as you well know, there's a lot of coaches that feel the exact same way. It's just, I think when you have that team that could go all the way and you lose it, it stings a little bit more, but, you know, that's okay. I think that it continues to motivate us for the future.
And you talk about the way the calendar's changed and the culture of the game has changed. And you had an interesting offseason because, all right, you pretty much knew that Larry Markkanen was gone. I mean, and that's, yeah. You know, he was a special talent, a special player. He represented your place so well. But you had to go through it with basically three guys and probably all different. Can you kind of get a feel for, like, the difference between, say, Lonzo and just talking about that situation and obviously Kobe and Raleigh Alkins. I mean, all three different guys, all obviously looking to try to do something special, but probably had to go through the process in a different way.
Yeah, no question. I'll start with Alonzo, obviously missing 19 games. You know, that hurts a lot, I think, if you're him, because, you know, he had an incredible offseason, was really looking forward to putting it together from start to finish, not just as a basketball player, Seth, but also as kind of an emerging leader and a different personality going from your freshman to your sophomore year. And although he played an outstanding, did a great job, especially under the circumstances that he was dealt, I think he's hungry to come back as a junior and almost finish what he started and really see if he can go wire to wire and take his game and the team that he's on to the next level. So, you know, I give his mom and him a lot of credit. You know, they really looked at the information but made a quick decision and never looked back. You know, Raleigh, him and his mom, you know, did a very similar thing. They decided to test the waters. But while they were testing the waters, you know, he never left us. You know, he always was more than happy to pick up the phone when we called. We stayed in constant communication, whether that would have been after he played a great game at the combine or after he started to tire of the workouts, you know, after the combine. So it really never felt like a disconnect. And if he would have said that he wanted to stay in, I would have been happy for him because he truly looked and tried to get the most information possible as it pertained to his future. So the fact that he decided to come back under those circumstances, I think both Alonzo and Raleigh, you know, make you feel good, and I think especially as we point towards next year. And really even the same with Kobe. You know, Kobe was wired to try to get his career started maybe sooner rather than later, but his family was always very transparent that was his goal, and hopefully he can make it, and I'm sure there's going to be some development that he's going to need to acquire, but my hope is that he can do it. We also lost a fourth guy, Chance Comanche, and sure. Chance probably was the one that maybe surprised us. But the one thing, Seth, today is I think once they get into this decision-making process, we have to support them, at least at Arizona. That's what we try to do, provide them with the information. And then, you know, if they want it, great. But at the end of the day, it's their decision, and, you know, we hope all of the guys make it.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I think the hardest thing probably is, like, say, a guy like Alkins who, right, you know, he's kind of teetering. He's not sure what he wants to do. Yet you've got your team, your individual workouts in the spring. You've got to figure out your program moving forward. He's kind of got – he's with you, but he's also trying to evaluate his future. How hard is it to balance as a coach your team and then that individual who's trying to, you know, maybe decide whether he's going to come back or move forward? How hard is that to balance?
Incredibly hard. It really is, because, you know, as kind of like a way we like to talk about it here at Arizona is we're walking out there next year regardless of whether these guys leave or stay. So, you know, at the end, our total responsibility above and beyond helping these guys make the right decision is to have the best team we can possibly have a year from now. And no question, it affects that. And, you know, there was a time when the emotion, if you take it out of it, that I really thought Raleigh was going to leave, and rightfully so. He played well at the combine, and, you know, I think has a lot of belief in himself. Sometimes when you have a lot of belief in yourself, you know, you tend to want to enter that and prove people wrong. And there's nothing wrong with that either. It's just a different way of going about your future. But as we thought, you know, we certainly recruited as if he potentially would not be here. And then when he came back, you know, it hurts because, you know, there's some tough conversations. And in some ways, you know, you're kind of preparing both if he comes back and both if he doesn't. And hopefully, I don't know how they tweak the rules. But, you know, Seth, I think the combine in general, if you look at it, has really changed. And, you know, the combine at one time was marked as these are the 60 best players in the world. And some of them would go and get measured but not play 5-on-5. It's now got to the point where the best of the best, and quite a few of them, don't even attend the combine. And then there's several others that used to play, but now because it's layered where they now are the best that are there, they tend not to play. So I almost feel like it's a false sense of really where these guys are, because if you turn the TV on and look at who's playing 5-on-5 in Chicago at the combine, they're really playing against different versions of themselves. You know, it's really hard to improve their stock when you're playing against somebody who's valued the same as you. And so I think that if the combine is really a big part of this testing the waters, then my hope is that the combine becomes more how it used to be, or let's go a different route. But I'm sure I'm not the only one who feels that way.
How much pressure do you think's on these kids? Like, they get to the combine, and let's face it, you're playing in Arizona, all right? Every game's on TV. You guys don't play in games. Your games are events. Yet, yep. A guy thinks he's going to go to the combine, and someone's going to come up with this new evaluation where everything that your guys have done all season is on a stage. You're on Broadway every single time you play. Don't you think it's kind of strange that people get to the combine and say, well, so-and-so helped his stock at the combine? How can you help your stock? People have seen the guy play 8,000 times. how do you deal with that with your kids? Yeah. Like when you say, like, these guys know who you are right now, dude.
Yeah. You know, I think we're at a point where a lot of college basketball is almost about peer pressure. Well, he's testing the waters, and I'm as good as him, so I'm going to test the waters. And, man, if I don't test the waters, it almost looks like I can't play. And same thing if you come back for your sophomore year, junior, and sometimes, you know, God forbid, you become a senior. A few years ago, Caleb Tarzewski returned back for his senior. And, Seth, he graduated from the Eller School of Business, which is one of our most prestigious undergraduate degrees. He was a great student, left with his degree. He became the all-time winningest player at Arizona, was an all-conference and all-Pac-12 player. And yet sometimes I almost felt like it was you roll your eyes, or people were rolling their eyes at him because I can't believe you're still in college. And, you know, that's when I think all of us have to take a step back and say, okay, what can we do to change that? Because to me, that's the worst part of it all. But to your point about Chicago, somebody brought it to me like this. You know, we practice 100 times. And in Arizona, like you said, because we have quite a few players that are talented on one team, you know, we have really all 30 NBA teams are going to watch us practice at least once before we play. Most of the time, several times before we ever play one game. And when you go through 37 games plus 100 practices, you know, the NBA in general has already watched you practice in the fall, gauged your improvement, watched you play. through a conference season in the pressure of March in the non-conference tournaments and big games, they have such a great feel for who you are and the direction you're going. There's no way that a snapshot of 2 days will change what they were able to get in 1 year. Now, you start going multiple years. You know, a few years ago, Solomon Hill, you remember Solomon, he became a first-round pick as a senior, and I think the Indiana Pacers valued him more because they watched him grow every day and compete in our practices over a four-year period of time than anything that they would have seen in a single workout or a weekend in Chicago.
Yeah, no, I scratch my head, and then, you know, obviously we have all these gurus that insiders that try to create stories that aren't stories. Now, moving forward, your team this coming year, preseason top 2, 3, 1, 5, wherever it is, you return a good group. I mean, you return an experienced point guard, you return an experienced front court player, a go-to scorer in Alonzo Trier. You have a terrific recruiting class coming in. How do you now transition from, all right, we've gotten through this craziness of March and April and May and that decision, and now we've got to kind of unplug, reboot, and now we've got this new group. How do you get that group to say, you know, let's understand this is a process. We're not going to be the number one team in the country day one. These are the things we're going to have to do to work. What's your first message to your group when you get them together in July or, you know, in summer school?
Well, I think that's number one. That's where it starts. It starts kind of right now. And, you know, in June is when our young players, the incoming freshmen, will all be here at some point in June, either early or mid-June. And at that point, as we move into July, I think, you know, building a trust among each other. And mostly, I think, showing those that haven't been here before how we do things in Arizona. This is what you do academically. This is when we walk into the weight room, who the strength coach is, how we do that, being on time. And then, you know, really starting to build the foundation that winning is so important for everything, including their individual goals. Easier said than done. This year, we're lucky, Seth. For the first time, I think it's been 5 years, we're going on a foreign trip to Spain. So I believe that its timing is really on our side because we have a big group of guys coming in who haven't been here before. And I think they are really talented, each one of them, and can help us. But yet we also return several parts from last year's team and in some cases a couple players that have been here for multiple years. You know, Dusan Ristic and Parker Jackson Cartwright will both be seniors this year. So we're going to have an opportunity to practice. August will be really both traveling to Spain and practicing and preparing for it. And I like to think that will be a great way for us to bond and maybe get ahead of the curve and build some team togetherness and prepare for our season.
Like a guy like DeAndre Ayton, who's, you know, either the best incoming freshman in the country, top five or whatever, and you just got a player from Canada who reclassified, and I want to pronounce it right. Is it Akot? Is that
Akot,
Emmanuel?
Yep.
Yeah, Akot.
Yep.
How do you transition those guys into what you call a players program or the Arizona way? Will you take maybe like an Alonzo or a Ristic and say, right, you guys, you got to coach this locker room. You got to hold these guys' hands and get them up to speed because they're not being recruited anymore. Now it's about putting in the work to get where we need to be as a team.
Yeah, no question. And I think the other thing, Seth, that we have learned is, you know, in the recruiting process, you know, part of our sell is, you know, at Arizona, the deal, and what I mean by that is like playing time, starting positions. You know, the deal is there is no deal. You know, that it's once you get here, you kind of, it starts all over again. If you're a high school or McDonald's All-American, you know, there are a lot of players that are on our team that in their senior year of high school were well thought of. The race begins all over again, and the roles and how things are carved out, you know, you start to earn it by what you do in the summer, through the fall, through our practices, and go from there. But no question, the leadership, those players that have been through things before, we're really depending on them to make sure that the guys who haven't been here understand what we do. But I would also like to think that, you know, a lot of the new guys that we have come in, you know, I think sometimes the perception and reality are different. Somebody like DeAndre, you know, I think he craves structure. You know, he's looking for a program that's going to embrace him, but at the same time that's going to push him and hold him accountable and make him better. You know, if you're somebody, you know, like Brandon Randolph, who's really on the rise here, you know, who's part of our incoming freshman class, Ira Lee, they both have their big goals, but they've worked hard you know, I think that what they're looking for is what can I get at Arizona that I haven't to this point? You know, can I get bigger and stronger? Are people going to be there to work with me so I become a better player? So, you know, I think the process of getting better and improvement, it starts in the summer, obviously, but I really believe this, that especially the younger players, they crave that. They want to be a part of a program that's going to help them, and, you know, hopefully we'll represent that.
That's great, Sean. Well, hey, I really appreciate you waking up for us. And by the way, I just want to broker the game about 3 years down the road, the Indiana-Arizona game. We'll get your dad right at center court. He's not allowed to come into any film sessions or work in any practices before. I'm going to broker that for ESPN.
Hey, you know what you said? There was a guy where we were recruiting, and I was talking to his dad, and he said, hey, I just ran into your dad the other day. And I said, oh, yeah. And he said, yeah, he's telling me about Arch and whatever and how excited he was. And he said, man, that'd be a great place for your son. I had to call him and say, whoa, wait a second now. What, you have two sons. you better check with a guy in the West to make sure that we're not recruiting the same guy. Like, you either get out of it or you better make sure you're equal in representation, because, I mean, Arch doesn't need any more help.
those winners in Bloomington are not as nice as those winners in Tucson, that's for sure.
No question. You're right about that.
All right, man. Hey, thanks so much. We look forward to seeing you this summer.
All right, see you. Bye.
We'll be back in a moment with Arizona's leading returning scorer, one of the most explosive wing players in college basketball, Alonzo Trier. Well, we're going to go from the coach, Sean Miller, the head coach of a players program, to the leading returning scorer from Arizona, Alonzo Trier. Zo, thanks for spending a little time with us. Interesting year for you, but let's move forward here. At the end of the season, you had a terrific year. I mean, it was exciting to watch you play and your team play and the success your team had, even though you didn't reach your ultimate goal. But, you know, for the games that you were sitting at and everything you went through, how cool was it for you to have Coach Miller stand by your side, include you in everything? And how important was that for you just going through that process when you were waiting to get eligible again?
That was definitely important. And I really appreciate the way Coach Miller fought for me. And, you know, he kept me engaged, because it was really tough, you know, to be engaged in a situation like that where, you know, you kind of feel left out, not a part of the team. But he did the best he could to keep me like I was a part of the team, and, you know, so that whenever I had the opportunity to play, that I'd be able to jump right back in and be as close to being as best ready as possible.
And that coach-player relationship, you probably kind of carried over to, you know, at the end of the season, you had choices to make just like everyone else. Some guys went completely through the process. Some guys, like yourself, said, you know what? I'm sure you sat down with Coach and some other people, got some information, but what was that process through? Because you came to your decision really quickly and just basically got back to work and working on your game and being a leader for your team next year. What was that whole quick process like for you?
I know I came to my decision pretty quick. There was something that fairly right after the season ended, I met with Coach and, you know, kind of discussed it with him and my mother. And I really thought that was just the best decision for me to return to school. I haven't really actually had a full season under my belt in college after breaking my hand my freshman year. I wanted to be, even though I thought I had a great, terrific for the time that I played and the numbers I put up and things like that. And we had some great success this year as a team, even though we didn't accomplish our final goal we had in mind. But it was something I sat down with Coach Roy about, and, you know, I trusted him, and I thought it was the right decision. I think it's the right decision for my future as well.
You know, it's interesting. You use the word trust, and, you know, I coached for 36 years, and I think player-coach relationships, it's all about trust, and it's a two-way thing. And, you know, just your relationship with Coach, when you think of Coach Miller, how has that relationship grown, and how did he earn your trust and vice versa? How'd that happen?
Just being around him every day, you know, learning about him and being with him, and then obviously with what happened this past year, our relationship kind of grew to another level, and we gained a closeness more about us to where that we didn't have before, even though we had great chemistry. But, you know, and he stood by me, and, you know, he's a guy that's taught me a lot of things, and I trust him, and I respect him as a basketball mind. And he's been really good, and we're very similar in a lot of ways. We think the same, and, you know, we're very much about preparation and our work ethic. So we get along really well, and, you know, we believe in each other.
That's what it's all about. So now, hey, you're coming back for your junior year. You've got a new role because you are the leader of this basketball team. When you think about leadership, like what's like? You've got this talented group of freshmen coming in. Obviously, Raleigh's coming back. You got Dusan coming back. I mean, you got a good team coming back. But you also have these talented guys that are going through this for the first time, and you're taking a trip overseas. What do you think your role is for this team, away from just making buckets and racking it and knocking down jumpers, away from basketball? What do you think the things that coach or you want to show people that you can do?
I think it'll just be bringing these guys along as fast as possible, teaching them the ropes of how it's going to be playing college basketball. It's not going to be easy. You're going to have your ups. You're going to have your downs. And I think as well as by leading vocally, I think leading by example is a big one. Because if you don't lead by example, it's really hard to be able for them to believe and buy into everything you're saying. And then just to show that I'm completely bought into what Coach Miller is trying to have us do, and that will spread through everybody else. And I think that'll lead to some great things.
And individually, what's the part of your game you say, you know what, I'm going to transition to where I want to get to a year from now? Right. What's the one part of your game that when you go into that practice facility, if you're on campus today and work on your game individually, what's the one area you want to kind of push out and say, you know, I'm going to show people I can do this, and I'm going to work on it every day so that I'm going to continue to work on my strengths, but I'm going to also try to improve in this area. What are the areas that you want to take your game to another level?
I think there's many areas, but I think that my overall being able to control the game when I'm on the basketball court would be the biggest thing for me. Stepping up, being the leader, being that guy on the team. And, you know, my game has improved both the 2 years that I've been in college greatly. So I think I'll be ready to make a big jump this year. And I think I'll be able to – I think I made a really big jump last year in the short time I played, and I think it would have been bigger if I played the whole season. And I think that, you know, with the full season under me next year and – you know, with being along with these guys and the help I'm going to have, I think I'll be able to make a big jump again.
How much have you talked to these young guys? Like, you've got this group coming in, I think, sometime in June, which is obviously a couple of weeks away. But, you know, once you made your decision to come back, have you touched base with these freshmen? Did you communicate with Raleigh? Did you communicate with Parker or the other guys in the team? Like, all right, here – guys, let's go. We got to make sure we're on the same page. What kind of communication have you had with, like, the incoming guys?
Most definitely. With a lot of the incoming guys, I haven't got to speak to them a lot. I've met all of them before, though. You know, they've been on visits, so, you know, help try to recruit them to get them here. But as far as the returning guys, those are guys that I'm on every single day that I'm working out with. I'm bringing to the gym with me, and, you know, I'm really trying to talk to them about, you know, last year, and we're being locked in and making this, you know, a great season. So Parker, Dusan, Raleigh, all these guys are returning, you know, we understand how important we are going to be for these, because we have a lot of new guys coming in. So it's going to be important for us to lead the way and help make this transition as smoothly as possible for them.
How much will that trip to Spain help in terms of bringing your team together?
I think it'll be great. I think we'll be able to learn about each other faster. I think we'll be able to grow in a chemistry level faster. And I think it'll just be great for them to get a taste of Coach Miller a little bit earlier than they would before. So I think it'll be a great trip for all of us. I'm excited because it gets us playing basketball early. And, you know, it gives us something to look forward to, and I think it'll lead to some great things to start the season.
Now, here's the toughest question, man. You're going to like this question. Who does the best impression of Coach Miller when he gets, like, really fired up and his eyes kind of start to pop out of his head and the veins are coming out? I know there's someone on your team that can do a great Coach Miller impression. Is it you?
I can do some, but I've seen a little bit of his different ways. I've seen all the ways he's gotten crazy on us. But you know, nobody's really brave enough to do that. We don't mock Coach Miller at all.
Not even the locker room.
Nah, not even the locker room.
To do Coach Miller, you have to sweat through your shirt and your suit, right?
Man, you gotta go through some phases.
I'll tell you one thing. He loves coaching you. We had a chance to talk to him earlier, and I've known Coach since he's been about 5 years old. How's that one for you?
Okay,
he was doing
wow.
his bit for Johnny Carson, and when I was the assistant coach at University of Pittsburgh. And no one's more passionate about coaching and teaching and loves his players more.
Absolutely.
And I know for a fact he's so proud of you and how you've handled everything, and so excited to get a chance to coach you again next year and you know, continue to chase that dream and help you chase your own dreams. So I really appreciate you spending some time with us. I'm a big fan, and hopefully we'll get out and have a chance to bring game day back to Arizona, and you guys will be, you know, making all those dreams become a reality this year. But I appreciate your time. I really do.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, sir.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, Josh, the student section. I'm sure we got a couple of interesting questions. A lot of stuff going on in college basketball. We've got winners and losers of the draft decisions and more. So let's do it, big boy.
Always love the students who are still there in the offseason, Seth. That shows dedication there.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's all about.
If you're showing up in the offseason, that means you are one dedicated fan.
You're working on your game,
Josh.
That's
exactly
right. Hey, you know what? Basketball, the ball bounces 24/7, 7 days a week, 12 months a year. If you're not working on your game, someone else is. So you know what? You've got to work on your game 7 days a week, 12 months a year. Let's go.
Absolutely. And Seth, you know who the most dedicated member of the student section is?
ID Kelly one.
ID Kelly one. He's at ID Kelly one, and he says, Seth, with the SEC returning lots of young talent, do you see a changing of the conference guard in that conference in 2017-18?
I don't see a changing of the conference guard because it starts with Kentucky. I mean, especially with Hami Diallo deciding to come back and return with the recruiting class. They'll be the youngest team in the country, maybe the youngest team in the history of basketball. But the depth of the SEC, to me, it is what's changing. You're talking about an SEC, in my opinion, moving forward with the coaches that they have in this league now, the way they're recruiting in this league, how they've maintained and kept players this past year, you're talking about a 6 and potentially 7 team from this conference getting in the NCAA tournament. I mean, look, Florida's going to be very good once again. I mean, this is a Florida team that's got good depth. They return talented players. They've got ball handlers. They've got scorers. I mean, this is a deep, talented Florida basketball team. Alabama is going to take the biggest step forward, in my opinion. I mean, you're talking about an Alabama team that really is extremely talented, extremely athletic. Avery Johnson's really used his NBA pedigree to help build his program, and he's done it, you know, the right way. He's signed top 100, top 50, top 20 players. He's got a point guard in Colin Sexton, who will be a terrific freshman. You know, guys put their names in but pulled out, whether it's Key or Ingram. I mean, Alabama's going to be a team to be reckoned with. Bruce Pearl, this is kind of, a breakthrough year for Bruce Pearl and the Auburn Tigers. You're talking about a team with, you know, he got great experience from Heron and Purifoy and Wiley, who came in early. He's backing that up with another terrific recruiting class. The team, to me, that might have the biggest breakthrough is Texas A&M. Robert Williams decides to come back. DJ Hogue is a big-time shooter. They're going to prove their point guard play. The thing about the SEC, Josh, is that players came back. Yonte Maitin at Georgia, he came back. That's huge. I mean, these are big-time players, players that give you the ability not only to win in non-conference, but when you get into the NCAA tournament, are going to have a chance to advance. So to me, as I look at this conference, I really believe that this is going to be a 6-7 bid conference this coming year. You know, Macon and Bradford decide to come back at Arkansas. That's huge. Vanderbilt, to me, is going to be a very tough out. Ole Miss is always competitive. We haven't even mentioned USC, who went to the Final Four last year. So I look at the SEC. I don't think there's a changing of the guard. I just think this is a deeper, more competitive league. A league that is going to put probably be second or third in the country in teams in the NCAA tournament. And I really believe that this is a breakthrough year for the SEC.
Next one, Seth, is from another Seth Kissinger, who's at Lil Kiss.
You never have enough Seths on this show.
That's true. And with the Twitter handle, like Lil Kiss 02, I wonder if that's an homage to our old friend Bill Raftery. Even if it's not, I'd like to think that it is. And Seth Kissinger wants to know, where do the Boilermakers rate in the nation and the Big Ten with who they have returning and who they're bringing in? Could you see them making a run at the Sweet 16?
Yeah, I think they could be a Sweet 16 team again. You've got to remember now, they're returning Isaac Haas, who pulled his name out of the draft. They're returning Carson Edwards, who gave him great minutes as a freshman, gets in the lane. Vince Edwards, a hybrid forward, who's been really good to him. And Dakota Mathias, Thompson, I mean, Ryan Klein. I mean, they lose Biggie Swanigan. Biggie Swanigan, a special player, great hands, carves out space, shoots the three, got himself in ridiculous shape. Terrific story. And you saw he waited to the very end. I mean, he struggled with that decision. But Matt Painter's program is bigger than one player. He's got veteran players, guys invested in his program. They could be a Sweet 16 team. Now, Isaac Haas has got to stay out of foul trouble. There's no doubt about it. But the maturity and the experience, the toughness, their ability to defend, they've got a great home court. You know, they're going to be a top 15, top 20 team. I think that when you think about the Big Ten, you have to start this year with Michigan State and then move on from there. But you know, Michigan State's got a really special team coming in and coming back. So, you know, to me, Purdue is going to be in the mix. I think Maryland's going to be in the mix in that conference. I think Maryland getting Justin Jackson back, the other Justin Jackson, was huge. They've got a good, experienced backcourt. The Big Ten's not going anywhere. I like the depth of the Big Ten. I think Northwestern's once again going to be good in the NCAA tournament team, but Purdue's going to be in the conversation and legitimately a Sweet 16 team.
And Seth, finally, we have this question from Zach. He's at Zach to the Rack. And he says, Coach, now that we know who's staying and who's going, who are you ready to declare as the winners and losers from this entire process?
All right, I'm not going to go totally obvious. I think the biggest winner was a guy who never really even pursued putting their name in, and that's Michigan State and Miles Bridges. I mean, think about that. He was so comfortable in his own skin. He was the first guy to come out and say, you know what? I love my teammates. I love my coach. I love where I'm at. I need to get better to get where I want to go, not just to be in the league, but to have an impact. I'm staying. So, I mean, like, Michigan State has to be on the top of the list. It's easy to say Kentucky with Diallo, but they got a young basketball team. I'm going to give you two outside-the-box winners that people aren't talking about. Seton Hall and Angel Delgado. Him coming back, one of the best rebounders in college basketball. He's the Charles Oakley of college basketball, the Dennis Rodman of college basketball. A missed shot is a rebound and a pass off the backboard. To me, he takes this Seton Hall team with his return. They're a second weekend team, a team that can challenge Villanova for the Big East championship. They've got athleticism in the backcourt. Delgado is really special. USC with Boatwright and Metu coming back. You're talking about two skilled, athletic, long front court players. Southern Cal, those two guys coming back with Stewart and with their backcourt. They are a sleeper in the Pac-12. And the Pac-12 is going to be a deep, talented conference. But, you know, people aren't talking about those guys. You know, they talk about the Pac-12. They'll talk about Welch and Holiday coming back. Good players coming back. They're good. But you know what? The two that are coming back for USC, if those two kids can stay healthy, I mean, that's going to be really interesting. Two losers to me, Tony Bradley. You can't replace Tony Bradley. You know, and look, I don't blame Tony Bradley. I love the guy's length. I love his ability to ball, finds him off the backboard. He's a very good rebounder. He can finish around the basket. He's an alert defender, guards ball screens. But you can't, it's hard for them to be able to replace a kid like Tony Bradley and his experience and what he earned this year. BYU, Eric Mika. I mean, BYU is a team that their roster is always evolving because their players are coming back from missions. But Mika's a guy that went on a mission, came back, proved he continues to rebound. You know, in that big win against Gonzaga, he was dominant as a front court player. You don't replace an Eric Mika. And I think that's a huge loss for BYU, who might have been in position to challenge Gonzaga. You know, although I still think St. Mary's might be the best team in that conference coming back. So those are, you know, I'm not going to get into the obvious. I mean, the obvious are right out there, but to me, like the USC's and the Seton Hall's, those guys become second weekend NCAA tournament teams by those players coming back. And for Carolina and BYU, which is those are really tough players to replace, front court players that are difference makers.
Keep those questions coming throughout the offseason. As you said, Seth, basketball never stops, and neither does the student section, so continue to ask your questions and submit your comments using the hashtag student section.
Before I go, I want to remind you that you can subscribe to our show in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you access podcasts. For Sean Miller, Alonzo Trier, I'm Seth Greenberg. I'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Coach G. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including daily NBA conversation and the NBA Lockdown podcast, available in the NBA category in the ESPN app. Courtside with Coach G.